Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, April the 13th, 2016, 1214, coming up on 1215 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the next 2 hours. And let me tell you what's coming up the next 2 days here before we get to our guest this hour, which is going to be fascinating. Tomorrow on this program from 1210 to 1 p.m. Thursday, we're going to be joined by former Marion County Sheriff Ron Schreider, who is again running for sheriff this fall after a 30-year absence from that position. He went into the private sector. He's again running this year, and he is going to outlay for the first time in broadcast his plan to eliminate the drug problem in Marion and go through it in detail tomorrow live here on the air, and we'll take your phone calls 1210 to 1 p.m. on WWGH Radio. Following that, tomorrow from 110 to 2 p.m., we're going to be joined by Jim Lavelle. Jim Lavelle is the Dallaside homicide detective, the man in the white suit who was handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was shot by Jack Ruby. Jim Lavelle tomorrow, 95 years old, will be calling in from Texas, 1:10 to 2 p.m. Now, today in our second hour, 1:10 to 2 p.m., we'll be joined on the telephone live from Maine by legendary attorney F. Lee Bailey. F. Lee Bailey, of course, a big factor in the Dr. Sam Shepard trial here in Ohio. He's the one who got Dr. Shepard out of prison after he was in there for a few years. So we'll talk to him about that. And of course, probably more notably known for defending O.J. Simpson and cross-examining Mark Furman in what was called the trial of the century. So F. Lee Bailey via telephone in the next hour. And interestingly enough, not on purpose, but that ties into this hour because we're joined live in studio by James Cronenberger. James Cronenberger was, and we're going to get this story, and he'll go into detail here, and he's here to talk about something very important, but he was falsely imprisoned for 18 years for attempted kidnapping. We'll learn about that in just a second, but he's here to talk about the Fair Treatment Reform protest of the Ohio Parole Board, which will take place on April the 22nd at 11 a.m. The meeting will happen at Broad and High Streets, and if you want more information beyond this program on that, you can email fairtreatmentreform@gmail.com. That's fairtreatmentreform@gmail.com, and we will go through that today as well. But it's a pleasure to welcome to these microphones in the studio and Marion to James Cronenberger. James, how are you?
Real good, thank you.
It's good to see you. Just get a little closer there to the microphone, if you could. But first, I want to start with this big event, the Fair Treatment Reform protest of the Ohio Parole Board. Why this event?
Well, we've been working for years trying to get the parole board to have some compassion and go by the programming the inmates have taken, their conduct while they're incarcerated. And when you probe around 16 inmates a year, that's just not enough. We have guys that's been down 35, 40 years that has 15 to life that should have been paroled 20 years ago. So all we're asking for the parole board is to be fair and consider these people, you know, before they get too old where they can't hold jobs. They're costing the state all this money with medical bills. So it's time that we give people a chance.
Now, when you are paroled, what happens?
It depends what crime. Under the old law, you get paroled after, it's 12 months, really the 13th month you get your walking papers, you know, then you're off of parole. And I think sex offenders have 2 years parole and murder maybe five. That I'm not sure about the murder. They might be two as well. But they have to meet with a parole officer. Sometimes they're required to take certain programs to help their addiction, whatever it may be, which I'm all for. I'm for people not returning back, so we want to work with them.
What about the argument that says if we parole these people, they will create the go back and participate in the same crimes they did before?
I think that's really a poor excuse because, I mean, you're going to take a chance no matter who you parole. Murder is the lowest recidivism rate out of any crime. Sex offenders are second lowest if treated, I'm talking about. You have to have a change of mindset to really not reoffend. Drug offenders is the highest one on, you know, going back to prison. It's so easy to get drugs. We got heroin all over our streets. So that's really a poor excuse. Sooner or later, you have to give these guys a chance and believe they have changed.
What about the argument that says if you release them out into a world like this, they might participate in some of these things?
Well, that's where they talk about changing people, places, and things. I didn't go back to the same county I was from, and I'm doing great out here. I think it's a mindset that you're not going to go back and fall into the trap of whatever somebody else is doing. If you see somebody else doing something wrong, walk the other way. It's not as hard as it sounds.
This event, what do you have planned that day?
Well, we're going to have a few speakers. One is Bob Petrakis. He's running for Franklin County Prosecutor on the Green Party. We have a candidate who's running for Senate coming up from Mayfield Heights, who I believe is going to be one of the speakers. Then we're going to let basically anybody else that would like us say something, talk for a little bit. But we're going to have banners, our signs out there. We're going to be peaceful. We're not going to use profanity or make any threats. That's not what we're about. We're about working with people to make change.
Why is this particular aspect very important to you?
Because we need to bring awareness to the public. The public, I don't think, really knows exactly what's happening. So we need to educate the public as well as our legislators on those who are incarcerated. They might have done bad things. Some might be innocent, but they're still people. They do deserve a chance. We're supposed to be a land of the free, but we have the most incarcerated out of any nation.
Why do you think that is?
That I never really thought about. I mean, maybe some other countries just take them out and shoot them. I'm not sure. But in America, it's, you know, a lot of it is about money. A lot of it's about convictions to make yourself look good if you get somebody, you know, locked up for something. So I think a lot of it is really stereotyping people instead of finding out really what the cause is behind it.
When you are paroled, I understand you have a parole officer who you check in with, but that day you walk out of prison, you don't have a job. I would imagine you don't have much money, may not even have a house if you don't have any family, no place to go. What do you do the day you walk out?
Well, I was actually terrified the day I walked out. The prison discharged me at 8 o'clock, but I waited for my two sisters to pick me up, and they came about 11, so I was starting a panic. I wasn't out for years, so, you know, just walking on the street, you're nervous. You know, you get, if you've been down a year or longer, you get $75 gate pay, and it's, I think, half of that if you do less time. But that's enough for maybe a couple meals. Those under the new law that were sentenced after 1996 that don't have tails on the end of the sentence, they just release them. So we're ending up with a lot of homeless people coming out of prisons. I think, you know, our director is doing a fine job because he is trying to find housing for people before they get released. But it's got to be the community working together. We don't want sex offenders homeless. We want them to be a stable environment. We don't want people that was down for any violent crime to be really homeless.
Now, it's going to be a hard argument, I would think, for people listening to this program to feel compassion, especially toward sex offenders, and want them to live a productive life. How do you get past that?
Well, I think you surround yourself by good people. Not everybody feels that way. My church has been very supportive of me. I have a strong support team, which I think people should have before they get released. Instead of just having a get-out plan, have a stay-out plan. Get some people that would be on a support team that you could call anytime if you're struggling. Get involved in a good church or a place where you can spend some of your time, get hobbies. You're going to do fine.
It's my understanding that when you're released from prison, when you are a sex offender, and it's unlike, I think, other crimes that are committed, that everybody in your neighborhood's alerted when you end up in that neighborhood. I imagine that would make life very difficult for you.
It doesn't for me. I've never hid my case. It's helped me be more of an advocate for people. Those that were sentenced, again, before 1996, they were taken up to court to be labeled, which was not part of their plea deal. So really, they shouldn't have been labeled. you know, but, you know, I would be more concerned about the person that hasn't been caught. You know, those are the ones that you really need to worry about. And I'm not just talking about sexual crimes. I talk about really any crimes. In Columbus, we have a problem with guns, you know. So, I mean, I'd be careful of that as well.
Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What was it like?
Well, I grew up in the Cleveland area. I was adopted at 6 months old. I had quite a bit of health problems, but I was a victim of sexual abuse from a swimming instructor when I was 7 years old. And I think I told my mom when I was in junior high, maybe, or high school. That's when I started acting out. My case was public indecency. It was not attempted kidnapping or anything. That never even took place, but the police said, well, we didn't know what your motives were, or the detectives. But, I mean, if they went through my history, it already showed, you know, the same thing over and over. And there's no excuse for that, you know, what I did. And I'm not trying to have an excuse. I feel bad about it. But that made me stronger today because I knew the areas in my life where I needed to work on.
You were growing up. Did you have both of your parents there?
Yes, I did. They were a strong Christian family. I couldn't have been adopted into a better family. We had all our needs met. We had the love we needed. I was not always the easiest kid to handle because I was real hyper. You know, so my mother would take me to a psychologist, but then she didn't like them watching me behind windows, so she took me out. But I just had a lot of problems. I don't even know what brought that on. I had more problems after I was sexually abused that, you know, I'd cry at night and scream at night, but my dad didn't know why.
When you were sexually abused, you say you were 7 years old,
right,
by a swimming instructor. When that happened, did you tell your parents?
I told them several years later. I think I was in junior or high school. I can't remember. It was. I think my first year in high school, I told them.
Because we are on radio and can't say certain things, as best we can, what happened?
Well, I'm not going to get into what happened between him and me, but it put an imprint in my brain that some of the stuff that he did towards me, I acted out when I got older. Now, that doesn't happen to everybody that was sexually abused, but I was not really strong-minded at that time. I had a lot of fears. Stress would cause me to act out. I was just out of control, and, you know, I didn't stop till I was in my mid-20s.
When your parents got word a few years later that this would happen, what was their reaction?
I think they kind of knew something happened. They had a lot of compassion. You know, I never went to the police on this, you know. He threatened, I can't remember if it was to burn our house down or something. He made a threat. I don't remember the exact words. So I was real skeptical to let anybody know because I actually thought whatever he said was going to happen. And I would like to talk about the forgiveness part, if I may. It was 30 years later or 20-some years later that I went through Kairos at Lake Erie Correctional. And you have to write on a piece of paper that they dissolve in water, people you needed to forgive. Well, I kept writing his name down and dissolving it. Well, it took me several years until I finally did forgive him. And that's when the healing started for me.
Now, when you say forgive him, you forgive him in your own mind, or do you actually, like AA says, go out and find him and forgive him?
I don't know if I came to that point yet. I don't hate him, but I don't know what I would say to him. I can't blame him for the way my life turned out because it was my actions, my decisions. But I, you know, I would like to tell him probably someday that I forgive him. I put on paper, if I knew his address, I would send him a letter and tell him. But
do you think he would deny it?
I don't know if it was to me, I don't know. But if there's other people around, maybe. It's an easy crime to deny. There's a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment. You don't want anybody to know that you were capable of doing such things.
Well, I was just thinking, he's a swimming instructor, and I understand you were 7 years old, so the mind doesn't work like that for most 7-year-olds. But he's around a lot of kids. That's a job where you're around a lot of kids. When and how did that ever enter your mind as you got older?
You know, I never really looked about it. I heard rumors that he got in trouble one time, but I don't know that as a fact, and I'm not going to say his name on air, you know, more or less for my family's protection as well. But if I just never thought about that, and I'm really hoping that he got the help that he needed, or he realized he needed help. I don't hate him. You know, I believe it's like any addiction, you know, drug addiction. I mean, you got to take the first step to admit you have a problem before you can change.
You're in your 20s. What did happen? How did your problem start, and how did it manifest itself?
Well, I just I think the first time I exposed myself was at my parents' house. I think I was 17. And I remember the police taking me down to the station, called my dad in, because my dad knew the police pretty well. And he said, lock yourself up in your room when the urge happens. Well, it didn't happen for, I think, a couple years. And then it happened again. And it seemed like it was whenever stress would happen. And it really didn't discriminate against age. Most of them were minors. You know, I'll say that. I don't even know what ages they were around. Because I did go around schools where I shouldn't have when I knew I had an issue. But I never had the desire of touching anyone or hurting anybody physically. But as I got older, I realized the mental's just as bad. And I want people to, you know, understand if they're struggling, they can get help.
So what you were doing, just to be clear for the audience, is you were exposing your private parts to children but not touching them.
Right.
Okay, so it was not a sexual encounter, it was just exposing.
Right.
And it never got to that point.
No.
Okay, so when did the police get involved?
I'm trying to think. I think the first time was in the 80s, and then I ended up getting arrested for public indecency in 92, and the judge threw it out. And the county picked it up and charged me with kidnapping, which I ended up plea dealing to attempted kidnapping because they told me I was automatically going to get 10 to 25 or more. If I didn't do that, I wouldn't have a chance. And they promised me I'd be released automatically after 4 years, 8 months, and 21 days, not knowing anything about the parole board. I had to see the parole board then, and they gave me a 9-year flop.
Want to go back a little bit here. What do you think in your mind that time, what was going on that made you want to do that? What were you just feeling?
I was so stressed out. It was almost like where you can't reason things out. I would get in my car. The car was a trigger, which I don't drive anymore because of health reasons. You know, I believe if I didn't have a car, that probably wouldn't have happened. And if I learned how to handle stress and receive the help that I needed from what happened when I was younger, you know, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But
what happened in the 92 incident that was different that got you in a lot more trouble?
Because of how many times it happened. It went from public indecency to child enticement to kidnapping. And I never, you know, laid a hand on anybody or anything, but they said they didn't know my motives. And it's like so many crimes, it eventually goes up to, you know, up the ladder to more serious offenses, even if it's the same crime you've been doing.
So you were, you obviously had committed some crimes.
Yes.
Okay, you go to, was it a trial?
No, because I had a court-appointed lawyer, and I can't remember his name, but he said, boy, if you take it to trial, you're going to get 10 to 25 years. You need to take this plea of, he first said 8 to 25, then it got down to 6 to 25. But he said, you will be out after 4 years, 8 months, 21 days, which wasn't true. And we're seeing that too much in the court systems, that people are pleading, you know, bargaining to crimes they didn't do because they're being threatened by either their attorneys or maybe there's somebody else in the court, you know, instead of being honest with them, you know, and, you know, trying to get them the best deal if able.
What is the attorney's motive to lie to you in that way?
Well, he did. He first of all, court-appointed lawyers don't make nearly what they would if you hire them on the street. So he wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. He was an older man, and they know. And I don't know how much money they get. They get a lump sum, and that's supposed to cover everything. So they want to get out of there so they could go to the other cases that they're getting paid. And I'm not saying all court-appointed attorneys are like this, but quite a few of them are. And maybe some public defenders as well.
Had you skipped that and said, I don't want a plea deal, now would it have then gone to trial?
Yes, it would have.
And if it had gone to trial and you were found guilty, which you were,
right,
you could have gone for up to 25 years to prison.
Right. And they may have found me guilty because it's hard to win a case, you know, even if something didn't happen, because people, it always puts in the back of their mind. The media doesn't help a lot of times, no offense. But, you know, when they follow you around and constantly put you on there, you don't see them ever publicizing anything positive that somebody does when they get out of prison. It's always the negative side for the most part.
For the most part, but I do think in some ways it's changing a little bit. I think when those good stories do happen and they come to you, I think you try to publicize
right.
them. When this happened, in your mind, you took the plea deal because you thought you'd be out in 4 years.
Right. I even asked if I could talk to my parents first, and that attorney said no. He wouldn't let me talk to my parents, and you know, I was kind of young, so I relied on my parents for advice on a lot of things. So I thought that there was a lot of corruption that went on at that time, and it's still going on. We got rid of the prosecutor, at least in Cuyahoga County, which was the first start. You know, he got voted out mostly by his own party. You know, so we want people that's in that's going to be fair, not just to get a conviction, but get the right conviction.
When did you realize something was up? When it was, it's not going to be 4 years.
When I went to the parole board the first time.
After 4 years.
Right. And I was at Grafton at that time when I went to the parole board. And, you know, I really thought they were going to parole me. And when I told that to the parole officer, they laughed at me. They said, oh, you've been lied to.
Do you think there's something you did? Did you do anything in those 4 years? Did you maybe approach them in a bad way that made them not want to parole you?
No, I never had contact with the parole board. I might have had two conduct reports for contraband, I believe it was, for having a radio that wasn't mine that somebody loaned me. But I wasn't in any trouble. I took as many programs in those 4 years as able. And nobody really gets a parole the first time, though. All the years I was locked up, I don't think I've seen one person get parole the first time.
There, we talked about this before we went on the air. There is an idea that certain people want to go to prison because prison is a cushy life. It's a free meal. It's a bed. It's televisions. It's recreation. It's weights. It's a gym. It's a ping pong table. You've been there. What is prison like?
Prison is not a country club like people think. You're away from your family. You have some officers are decent, then you have some that's not so decent, just like inmates. You know, so you have to deal with all different types of personalities. You take a shower with a bunch of people. The bathrooms aren't private. I always liked cells because you had a little bit more privacy. When I went to Marion, though, it was dorms, but I also had... I liked Marin a lot more because of the staff there. They wanted to have more programs. They wanted people to succeed when they got out. Warden Beetler and Jason Bunning, both. Jason is now the warden. He does an outstanding job at Marion.
When you were in prison, for me, if I was going to prison, the first thing that would come to my mind would be fear, why I wouldn't want to go there. Did you have a fear of being incarcerated, that you're in there with murderers and so on and so forth?
At the beginning I was, but as time went by, that left me. I got along pretty much with everybody. I didn't hang around with everybody because I wanted to stay out of trouble, you know. I mean, you know, so it's really it's what you make of it.
Were there ever those moments like we see in the movies where people do threaten you, where people are not the nicest people in the world?
I never been threatened. Shortly after I got locked up, I had a brand new pair of shoes stolen that my parents got me. And then my roommate went over there and hit the guy, you know, or confronted him. I can't remember exactly what happened because I was sleeping. And they both went to the hole, you know. But I had people that looked out for me just as I looked out for some people that came in as well.
4 years comes, you are denied parole. What's your mind state at that time?
I was more or less in shock. I don't remember if I called my parents right away. I think I waited a little bit because I had to kind of let it sink in because I really believed I was going to go home at that time, as so many people do. Inmates now are giving up hope on going home on parole because, you know, there's got to be compassion somewhere in the parole board system. That's why we're working on reforming it so that everybody would have a fair opportunity.
Now, are you up for parole every 4 years?
No, it depends. I have a good friend who's at Marion Correctional. They gave him a dime, you know, 10 years. I don't know if it was a year ago or so. And they took away the super flops for a while, and they just brought them back. But, some are getting 2 years, some are getting 5, 10.
Did you have a plan after the denial of what you were going to do?
I wanted to get involved in some type of program, so I got involved in the JCs up at Grafton.
When were you up for parole after that?
I'm trying to think now. It was in the 90s sometime. And then when I went up in the 90s, they gave me a parole, but a week before I left, they took it away from me and ended up giving me a 5-year continuance.
Now, why was that?
They said not suitable for release is what they said. It might have been victims complaining. I can't recall. We don't see any of the records on who complained or what have you, but something happened there. So when I would go back up in 5 years, I only had 18 months to go, and I wanted to be flopped. I wanted to max out. I didn't care about being, you know, getting a parole at that point. So they did, you know, max me out. Yeah.
Do you understand why victims might not want you out?
I do, but there needs to be a limit how many times, because people can change. I don't really care what a person has done in the past. That's why we in Fair Treatment Reform, we don't care what anybody did 10, 15 years ago. It's who they are today. And I do believe people can change. Some of the people I know that are the smartest are incarcerated, very good writers. Artwork. I mean, you should see the artwork some of them do.
You were 7 years old and received a trauma from the swimming instructor. Have you ever thought that maybe some of the things you did traumatized those people long term?
Yes, I did. And after every time I did something wrong, I felt so guilty that I kept promising myself, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And you know, as soon as I got in a fight with my wife at the time or anything that would bring stress on, that caused me a snap, which I learned how to handle these days. And I'm under more stress with this group, but it's a good kind of stress.
How do you handle it?
I call our vice president up a lot. She's very supportive. Everybody on our board, you know, I talk to a lot of them almost every day. I stay active in my yard doing yard work because I love landscaping type work. And that's very therapeutic. Animals are very therapeutic, and we finally got a cat. So, you know, you had to find something that will help you relax. But this is a good type of stress because this is a stress that we're striving to help others.
What would you say if you could talk to one of your victims today?
I would apologize over and over because I don't even know their names. I feel bad what happened, and it should have never happened, and it never will happen again. I'm that sure, you know, with what I'm doing today. Back in those days, I just had a lot of struggles that I didn't really deal with. And I hope that, you know, things are better with them because I do feel real bad.
How do you know it will never happen again? What changed?
My thinking. I don't even think about it anymore. I have so many positive things happening in my life today that, you know, my parents helped me get a house that is in my sister's name. I'm not doing without. I'm not the richest man because I'm on disability. I had triple bypass last year and 2 heart attacks since. But, you know, and that's from eating all those soups while I was locked up. But I just know it's not going to happen. I have too strong of a support team that I can call anybody, you know, at any time, and they would talk to me.
18 years goes by. What happened?
I finally maxed out. You know, I walked out of prison. And I made a promise to one friend up at Marion, and I'll say his name, Gerald Lumore. I knew he was innocent of his of the crime he was convicted of, which was murder. And we had an attorney that agreed to do a pro bono case, but he ended up dying of cancer before. And I only made that promise to one person, not thinking I was going to really stay in it long, but I was president of Ohio Cure at that time. And we kept getting letters, more stories of the same. And we don't fight for people's innocence. We don't fight for their release. We fight that they're treated fair, that they're getting the proper medical, and that the board looks at, you know, everything they've done while they were incarcerated.
Because that was a Marion case, why was he innocent? What was he convicted of?
Murder. It was actually a Cleveland case, but he was in Marion with me.
Okay.
And they arrested him, I believe, 5 years later of the case. He even went to the woman's funeral. He admitted having an affair with her, but he didn't kill her. And I believe him because an inmate, when they're telling you about their case, somebody that's lying, their story would constantly change slightly. His was always on point. And I just knew in my heart he was innocent. I've talked to all his family members who I am friends with today.
When you walked out of – what year did you get out of prison?
January 24th, 2011.
That day, what was that day like?
Scary. I mean, I went – my hair was real long. I went to get a haircut, and my sisters acted like my mother, telling them how they wanted my haircut. We went out to eat, and forgetting that there's a knife there, I'm trying to cut meat with a fork – because obviously we can't have knives in prison. I didn't look at the waitress when we were ordering like you're supposed to. I mean, I just forgot, you know, the most common sense, you know, how to react, you know, in certain situations.
I do want to let the listening audience know we're talking with James Cronenberger. Very interesting story here. And the phone lines are open. We've got about 14 minutes left. If you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment, and we can fit that in, we will do it. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Just feel free to break in at any time. And again, the Fair Treatment Reform Protest of the Ohio Parole Board will happen on April the 22nd at 11 a.m. And the meeting will happen on Broad and High Streets. And if you want more information on this, fairtreatmentreform@gmail.com is the email to get more information. But again, the phone line, 740-383-9944. When you get out of prison, it's what, 5 years ago now, do you feel you're totally adjusted to regular life again?
For the most part, I am.
For the most part. What was the hardest part?
Today still, you mean?
Yeah.
Trying to share my story so people don't always think the worst part. I had a former partner I worked at that blasted me on Facebook. And, you know, I don't think it's my job to go around telling everybody everything that I did. But I won't lie neither. You know, it's important that people know that they can receive help when they're struggling before it gets into a criminal, you know, nature.
After being in there for 18 years, when you thought you were going to be in for four, are you angry?
No, I'm not. I was angry at my judge for a while because I thought he could have handled it differently. But I really understand, and I have a lot of respect for my judge because I think he wanted to give me a chance. And, you know, he really couldn't at that point. You know, he's still in office today. He's up there in years, though, and I think his son is going to be running to take his seat. But, you know, I would like to start meeting with judges, you know, and let them know that we need more programming in prison. If they're going to sentence people, you know, for different crimes, we need a better sex offenders program there, not a three-month program. And I think they do have a better one now. And I wasn't even eligible to take that program because of the charge, you know, and I tried to get into several different times and they wouldn't let me.
Do you, is it understandable, even maybe more so than murder, oddly enough, why this is such an unforgivable thing for so many people?
I understand, but I think, you know, the healing process needs to begin with forgiving and, you know, It's the stereotype a lot of times that people hear about. They hear about the worst of the worst people that's in that was in for our for maybe multiple rapes or something. But I do believe anybody can change, and I'm, you know, asking people to pray about it and pray for people instead of persecuting them. We don't want to push them into a corner where they're going to reoffend again. Harassment and all that, it just pushes people further and further away. And, you know, drug offenders, too, that it will cause them to reoffend. And we don't want that.
In recent years here in Ohio, the prisons were privatized. What did you make of that?
I think that's the worst thing that happened in Ohio. The inmates are not getting the best medical care as possible. The COs aren't making, the correctional officers are not making what they do for state. So, you know, they have to break up fights, and they're not going to rush in there to do that when they're not receiving, you know, top dollar to do the job. The programs are lacking. One institution, I was talking to somebody that works up there about all the programs they had on the website. Only two of them they had, but they had like six or seven offered.
Do you have any children?
Yes, I do. Two sons.
If something that you did happened to one of your sons, how would you feel?
That's a hard question. I would be angry, just like any parent would be. They're older now. But I would hope that I would learn to forgive, you know, and get the counseling that my kids would need. But that's a situation I never had to be in, and I'm glad. I don't know my kids very well because I was locked up the whole time. I'm hoping someday I will. My crime never happened against any of my kids.
Do they want to be associated with you?
Not at this time, because they've only heard the negative side.
What's the positive?
The positive is that I would never lie to them. And, you know, I reached out to my son. I sent him a Christmas card, one of my sons, a couple years ago. And he's making contact with my family now, and he comes over on certain holidays.
Do your kids have kids? Are you a grandfather?
Yes, I am.
Would it be... Do you think your kids would be fearful of leaving the grandkids with you?
Well, I wouldn't ask them to. I would want somebody there, but I know nothing would happen. But to protect myself, I'd always want somebody else there.
Because
of my past record.
Because do you think it's much like a scarlet letter for you?
Used to be, but I don't look at it that way anymore because I have a testimony to tell, and I'm going to share it with people. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, there's nothing I can do about it because I've changed.
Is this, did God change you? Is it a higher power? Is it something within you? What do you call it?
Well, I received Christ when I was 13, but when I was going through the Horizon program up at Marion, I was just miserable. And I knelt down and rededicated my life to Christ. So I know Christ is what changed my life. And, you know, Christ can change anybody's life. The worst sinner, look at some of the apostles that went to prison for nothing, or disciples, you know, just for preaching the gospel. But I went for something.
Do you believe that when you leave this planet, you will go to heaven?
Yes.
Why do you believe that when I'm guessing some of the people who you offended probably think not, and maybe some people listening right now?
Well, because when you make a personal relationship with Christ and invite him into your heart, you know, you're saved, the Bible says, you know, and it could be, you know, I remember James Dobson, a Christian psychologist, interviewing James Bundy the day before he was executed, and he believed he was a Christian. You know, Christians sin still. That doesn't give you an excuse to sin. You have to repent afterwards.
Again, I do want to let the listening audience know we're down to about 7 minutes. Fascinating interview here with James Cronenberger, and again, he's going to be a big part of the Fair Treatment Reform protest on the Ohio Parole Board, April 22nd at 11 a.m., and the meeting will take place on Broad and High Streets. Fair Treatment Reform, no spaces, at gmail.com if you want more information. Phone lines will remain open for about 6 more minutes, and as I say, if you've been thinking about it, give us a call, 740-383-9944. You can ask James a question, or if you have a comment you want to make, just get it in here. Break into the conversation at any time with 6 minutes left, so if you've been thinking about it, now would be the time to do it. 740-383-9944. Do you ever give any thought to the God that has forgiven you? Was he there when the acts were going down?
I was out of fellowship with God. I quit going to church for a while, so I don't believe I was walking with him, and it's not God's fault that I did these wrong things. It's my fault. But he's a forgiving God, you know, and you know, 1 John 1:9 says he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. That's not just one person. It's anybody that's done something wrong.
A lot of people tend to find God in prison. Why do you think that is?
I think because of searching. And it's not just the Christian faith. We have Wiccans in prison, which is one of the fastest growing religions today. But I think because they're searching for peace. And I think they're sincere when they leave. And some of them take it with them to the streets and live a good, productive life. And some of them toss the Bible in the trash can on their way out. But that's only a small amount. I knew Christ before I got locked up, so it was easier for me to turn back because I had nowhere else to turn. You know, I mean, people will let you down, but God won't.
Are you a registered sex offender?
Yes, I am.
Is that the case that when you go, it's my understanding, when you go into a neighborhood that people have to be informed?
They are, but I have awesome neighbors, and I don't have any restrictions where I live. I can live any place because I was sentenced before that law took effect. But I have great neighbors. I have a great community in Columbus, you know, who pretty much doesn't sit there and judge people because they know that, you know, there's things that happened in their life maybe that they're not proud of.
Is there ever, has there been a problem in that 5 years with somebody in a neighborhood knowing what you did?
Only my former partner, and she knew about it, but I'm not going to say her name. She blasted me, and, you know, and I forgive her, you know, but when you're doing this type of work, you don't choose who you advocate for. You try to help the whole in general.
You talked about your friend and your former partner. Why are they coming after you?
Well, they're not coming after me. She works a lot with drug offenders, and she just thinks drug addiction is not an addiction, you know, and it is, and it can be. But she does remarkable things with people that have drug habits and problems. And, you know, that's where she's best suited at, in working in county jail issues, where we're better at prison issues. And now we're talking somewhat, you know, but people have to come to an understanding that, you know, this was years ago. It didn't just happen over the last few years.
Do you live in any kind of fear?
No.
And as you've said, never a chance of anything like this happening again. But are you afraid of being accused of anything again?
Not really, because I don't put myself in that position of being able to be accused. You know, I'm pretty careful.
As you live out the rest of your life, what do you want to do? What can you give? How, when this fair treatment reform protest of the parole board happens, what are you the model of that suggests that this is the right thing to do?
Well, we're the model of concerned people, you know, that believe people should be treated fair. Our whole board, one of the rules was to be part of a board. You couldn't judge anybody for their past, and nobody does. So we want the inmates to know we're here, we care about them. We want to educate people, you know, in society as well as the legislators about those who are incarcerated. They might have done bad things, but they're not bad people.
Again, the Fair Treatment Reform Protest of the Ohio Parole Board, April 22nd, 11 a.m. The meeting will be on Broad and High Streets in Columbus. FairTreatmentReform@gmail.com is the email address. What's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret is I can't say even going to prison, because if going to prison is the only reason I have compassion for others. I think it is that I wasn't in my kids' lives.
Did it, in an essence, I understand you're a productive citizen. Do you consider yourself a productive citizen?
Now I do.
Productive citizen now. Did that 18 years in prison essentially ruin your life, take away your opportunities?
Well, I always had a dream sitting in the Senate, you know, but I'm doing basically the same thing I would have done then, because I'm constantly at the State House. But no, I think it you know, just like the Bible talks about Christ shaping and molding us, and I believe that's what happened with the programs that I've taken, Horizon Initiative, that's at Marion, London, and Chillicothe, outstanding program, Kairos, then Pros and Cons that they just started up at Grafton. Look that up on Facebook. Outstanding program. They would be a great group to get in here someday.
It would be great to talk to these people. And I've always said I'd love to do it, and I it's my understanding they listen to us out at Marion Correctional Facility. I'd love to do a show from there. So if they ever let us come in and do a show, I'd love to talk to some of the inmates, because everybody does have a story to tell. When you look back at your life and your time, you say you would have liked to have been in politics, maybe. We have changed a lot in the last half century. Gay marriage is now legal. Segregation is not separate but equal was taken away. Women have the right to vote. Women wear pants now. Things have changed. Technology has changed. Will there ever be a time when people can look past this and be totally forgiving? Do you believe?
I believe so, and I think it's already started with Councilman Jeffrey Johnson in Cleveland, who was sat in the Senate, who served time in prison. And there's other political people, I'm sure, because any of us can run for state office. I believe we can't run for federal is what I understand.
So you would like to run for office?
No, I wouldn't.
Not now?
No.
Okay. If speaking to the audience with about 30 seconds left, what do you want them to know about you, James Cronenberger?
Well, I'm a man that has no problem admitting his faults, but a man that has changed, that put Christ first in his life, and, you know, want to, you know, to serve, you know, I want to be a servant now and help those who don't really have a voice, and we want to be their voice.
How bad, in your estimation, was what you did on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, I think it's a 10, even if there's no physical contact. Just because, you know, I had better, you know, standards for myself than what I did.
James, thank you for coming in today. It's everybody has a story. It's very interesting, and getting the word out for your event. And best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. When is it, do you regret not getting as many Emmys, things like that?